Hello, and welcome to AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgThendic Group. I'm Sarah Nolet. I think it's safe to say that agrobotics is finally, or at least very nearly, here. From autonomous equipment, to retrofit kits, to hyper-specialized tools and attachments, startups are taking all kinds of approaches to bring solutions to market. And as they do, fundamentally new practices are becoming viable. But with the arrival of all this cutting-edge technology, how should we think about the different categories of solutions? And will one company, whether a startup or an OEM, end up building all of the hardware and the software needed to make those implements useful?
A robot on its own does nothing. So we partner with other companies to put their technology on board. There's no way that we can develop all these different things we need, because it's not one, it's not a dozen, it's not 20, it's not 100. We need thousands of different developers creating smart ag tech to go on board our robots.
That's Andrew Bate, co-founder of Swarm Farm Robotics, based in Queensland, Australia. Andrew and his co-founder and wife, Jossie, have been building this autonomous equipment company on their farm in Emerald and watching closely at how the autonomous ag space is evolving, what farmers want, and how the future will look, not just in Australia, but also around the world. But first, a relevant disclosure. Tenacious Ventures is an investor in Swarm Farm, and both Andrew and I sit on the board, which means, among other things, that I won't go easy on Andrew today. This podcast is also, of course, not investment advice. Andrew's background is in agronomy, and he started his career checking cotton and grain crops for pests in northern Australia. It wasn't until he was back on the family farm that he felt maybe engineering would have been the better route, given his love of building things, solving problems, and finding new ways to farm, which led him down the path to robotics. But the path from farmer and tinkerer to founder wasn't necessarily an obvious one, and it took experiences in advocacy, farm entrepreneurship, and believe it or not, water skiing, to help him and Jossie found Swarm Farm. It also took a good amount of frustration. Here's Andrew.
I think I got frustrated with precision ag and big data. I did some precision ag courses early through agronomy, and I was one of the first guys with the head of yield monitors, and one of the first guys when they turned selective availability off with GPS to get a high accuracy GPS at the time, which was accurate to 10 meters. But I think what was really burning me was our farming practices weren't changing. And there was two things about robotics. One, agriculture's been built on massive machinery and getting more efficient by getting larger machines in your paddock. And we found that the larger we went, the more we compromised. And we were going backwards in our own farming operations with the machine. It was too big and too cumbersome. And if we could go robotic, we could make machines that actually grew higher yields and would be better. And the other thing was to bring these new farming practices into agriculture that we didn't see now. So we kind of buy farming machinery and we design our farm to work around that farming machinery and those field practices that were the limitation on how we farmed. And so with robotics, there was an entire world of new technology that could be released on board robots that could fundamentally change the way we produce our crops in the field. And that's been the ethos and the beginnings of Swarm Farm was to bring new field practices into agriculture to fundamentally change the way we grow crops in the field. And robotics was the key to doing that. So that's how we fell into building a robotic company. We wanted to bring new farming practices into agriculture.
And did you look around? Were there other robotics companies, other research projects or things overseas or things in the pipeline that you said, oh, maybe they'll do it and we should just wait for it? Or yeah, what did you see in the landscape?
It was really early days in robotics. We started, Google didn't have a driverless car program, Uber didn't exist. You couldn't pick up a drone on your way home from Harvey Norman. I guess I thought we would get our first technology from the military. So I spent a lot of time talking to military companies, seeing whether we could get some of that technology and bring it into agriculture. And we realized that the technology in military really wasn't going to work in agriculture. It was too expensive. It wasn't designed for agriculture. There were all sorts of reasons why it wasn't the right fit.
What's an example? Why wasn't it designed for ag?
I think certainly the cost, the entry point in that technology was just out of the realms of agriculture. And there was so much more that needed to be done to be used in agriculture. On the front line, the cost is no object compared to what they're trying to achieve in their missions. But what we did find was Australia was really strong in mining robotics, and we had the Mine of the Future running in the Pilbara. And we had some really experienced universities and people in Australia that had pioneered that industry. And so we were able to form partnerships and springboard off that. So that's how we got our start.
And did you find that was better suited? Did that approach work out in terms of the mining tech being a good fit?
I think it was probably more the people that we're able to get and the experience we could bring in. So once again, money's no object in mining. Agriculture, obviously, the cost has to be much lower, but the environment's far more open too. So a closed mine site is a world away from a farming paddock. And We formed partnerships with two universities and kicked off our first projects, and that's how we got started. And that was probably a really valuable time for us, because stepping from working on a farm and being a farmer to developing a tech company, I'm not a software engineer, I don't write code. But what I did learn through that working with universities was how to build software development teams, how to build our tech stack. We developed our technology roadmap and were able to start building a tech company. And those skills were really valuable, and we learned a lot of lessons through the university sector. And we got to the stage where we realized that working in an academic environment, we'd outgrown that. And so probably about year two, we kind of broke out of the universities and started to develop our own technology and employ our own software development team. Mm-hmm. And we grew from there.
And why didn't it work out to keep collaborating with the university? What was it, a kind of cultural mismatch or pacing, you said? Like, why? What did you think would work there that kind of didn't?
Yeah, I think cultural. So I think it's changing now in Australia, and we're starting to see it. But in this country, we talk a lot about R&D and C, and everyone talks about R&D, and R&D shouldn't be put together. They need to remove the and. It shouldn't be there. And people say we're going to do R&D. Well, research is a world away from development, nothing, in fact, to do with development. Research is discovery, new to science, and universities are great at doing that. What we actually need, if we're going to commercialize technology and get it into the hands of farmers, is development of technology that can be commercialized. And notice there's no R in that. And we so often we used to see government programs or even industry programs, it's called R&D, and they are all based in universities, and nothing would ever turn up for a farmer in the 5-year, 10-year timeframe. Some stuff did, but we've got research papers stacked to the ceiling and very little actually delivering an ROI to farmers. I think what's changed and is we're starting to see more and more conversations now about supporting the D part, the development of technology, so it can be commercialized now. And that's what startups do. They develop a product, find a product market fit, find the business model, support it, so it can actually be commercialized and delivered en masse to an industry.
Do you have any examples of what for you guys, a mismatch with the university, like any stories that come to mind of it was too slow or too expensive or anything like that you can share?
I do remember early in some of our projects being sat down and told, we're here to make discoveries that are new to science that can be publicized. It's publish or die. If we can't publish, we die. So that's our focus. And being very disheartened by those conversations, because we're here to revolutionize an industry and create a new industry. And we're funding these projects. We're putting our own money in that we've saved up into these projects. And this is why technology doesn't get in the hands of farmers, you know, in terms of really making a difference. Because a publication is no use to a farmer until it's been developed through to something they can use. So, yeah, that was a cultural shock for us. And we're able to navigate through that, have discussions and work out how we could get through that. But I think, once again, going into a technology company and being a bit naive probably helps, because if we'd known that, we probably wouldn't have done it, but we wouldn't have learned the skills on how to build a software development team and pull together a tech portfolio that we could actually commercialize.
And speaking of your team, you guys are still located in Emerald and in some cases still on the farm. Tell me about that decision and what are the kind of pros and cons of being located in a regional area and that kind of even on farm aspect?
There's lots of people who told us you couldn't build a tech company in rural Australia. And despite some good advice that how hard it was going to be, it was a value of ours we decided to keep and we weren't going to let go. And so we decided to put all of our software engineers and developers on farm. And it was kind of like a hurdle when someone applied for a job. If they couldn't make that hurdle, they weren't good enough for us, because we wanted people that were fully immersed and fully involved in agriculture. And it's probably one of the things that's led us to success, that we're boots on the ground and we turn software engineers into farmers. It's not the other way around. It's been really valuable because we've actually got some great people into agriculture that would never have been involved. We've got some great people to come back to agriculture that may have slipped away. And we've created opportunities out in rural Australia, and that's been fantastic. Now, as we grow, we're spread out with two bases. We've got a base in New South Wales and a little tiny town called Harden, which people would say, why would you pick a town like Harden to be your second base? Why wouldn't you? It's a great spot. And there's farming there, and we've got great people there, and that's why we built there. Our home base is a little town called Gindi near Emerald. Gindi is one school, a tennis court, about 5 houses. And why would you build it there? That's where our farm was, and that's why we built the technology. As we grow, we've got people now spread across Australia and other regions. And it's a value we'll always hold, I think, about creating opportunities in not only rural Australia, but rural communities around the world, and making sure that our technology can help create jobs and opportunities for growth in rural communities.
Let's talk a little bit about Swarm Farm specifically. Tell me a little bit about the hardware you built. What is the Swarm Bot?
So we build autonomous robots. They're about the size of a small car. So they're about 4 meters long, about 2 meters high. And it's very much a platform. So our robots are like a Meccano set in terms of you can put narrow axles underneath them and they'll fit in a vineyard or an orchard. You can put really wide axles and put them in a cotton field. You can put tall axles underneath them. They're like a daddy long legs and they'll go over the top of crops. There's also really low compact ones that to go in horticulture, but it's all the same robot. It's just a little Meccano set of different wheels you can put underneath it. They're fully autonomous. They run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've got a little diesel engine on them, but because they're so light, we cut fuel burn by about 30% over a traditional tractor. They work in fleets or swarms. So instead of one large machine, we have multiples of small ones that work in the fields. And because they're light, they do less damage to the soil. They're simpler, they're lower cost, and they're more accurate than than traditional agricultural machines because they're robotic and designed to be accurate in the first place.
And what kind of stuff are they doing? What are customers using them for?
Yeah, we've very much built a platform technology. A robot on its own does nothing other than traverse a paddock. So we partner with other companies to put their technology on board. And we've got this pivotal kind of stage in with Swarm Farm saying, if we're going to revolutionise agriculture with new field practices and going to make that difference by bringing new field practices in agriculture, there's no way that we can develop all of these different things we need because it's not one, it's not a dozen, it's not 20, it's not 100. We need thousands of different developers creating smart ag tech to go on board our robots because this is a different scale to what we've seen before. If I think back to when iPhones came out, I had a Nokia phone, and when I bought my first iPhone and took it home, it didn't do much. It just made phone calls like my Nokia used to. It became revolutionary when there were dozens and then hundreds and then thousands of developers releasing apps on board that were solving my problems one app at a time. Prior to that, I had a home PC with maybe 3 or 4 bits of software on it. I made my life fit around that. All of a sudden, I had thousands of developers solving problems that were never solved for me, and that revolutionized my life and everyone's. We're going to see a similar thing in agriculture with robotics. Right now, you buy technology in terms of tractors, planters, or fruit picking machinery, and you design your farm to work around that. The revolution we're going to see in ag robotics is around technology solved at a micro level where problems are solved, really high value problems are solved at a local level, and literally dozens and then hundreds and thousands of developers around the world releasing those solutions in agriculture.
What's an example of an app that's been released today, and what's one that you're excited about in the future?
So a lot of our robots go out with weed detection cameras on board the robots. So they detect individual weeds and just spot spray them with a herbicide when they see a weed. It's technology that's been around for quite a while, but the uptake of it's been fairly low today. But on board a robot, it's a match made in heaven. The autonomy adds so much more value to that technology compared to being on a tractor. And so that technology is now deeply integrated in our robots. There's actually 2 and soon to be 3 companies that have that technology now integrated onto our robots. So there's choices for farmers as to which technology suits them better. And it's a really good ROI and delivering big results for farmers in terms of saving the amount of pesticide they use each year. And we're not talking about 10% saving, we're talking 60 to 80% savings over a season, and sometimes up to 99% savings in a single operation. But more exciting is things that are coming. So think about robotic fruit picking. No one's there yet picking fruit robotically yet. It's coming, and I think we're down to the stage now where it's 18 months, 2 years away from seeing Y-type commercial release. I think some really smart weeding technology coming, whether it's mechanical or heat-based like lasers or steam, that can kill weeds. That's really smart technology that's coming like a freight train now. And I think the efficient use of nitrogen is probably somewhere in the middle. Obviously, at the moment, you nearly need to sell your left kidney to get hold of nitrogen fertilizer now. The cost is phenomenal, but you just can't get it at times with world supply chains and what's going on. At the same time, you've got all the pressure with ESG and emissions and the need to clean up, you know, the environment. And I think there's some really smart technology out there that's going to let us fundamentally shift the efficiency of nitrogen use on board robots through smart application. And it's not necessarily going to be hugely high tech. It's just going to be smartly applied and going to make a real difference.
When you talk about the platform, it starts to get to what you guys call an ecosystem. So not just what you guys do, but this whole world around Swarm Farm. Like, how do you end up kind of winning in this platform ecosystem strategy? Are you currently winning? What does winning look like? And probably get a lot of pushback around, don't you need distribution? Are you going to work with the big guys? So yes, sell me on why this is the right model.
I think if you look at how this ag robotic market's kind of evolving, it's an interesting time. And We see three categories that are forming now. So the first category is driverless tractors or aftermarket autonomy kits. You've got John Deere announcing its autonomy program with a large marketing budget, lots of fanfare. You've got Case buying up Raven, who bought Dot. You've got companies like Monarch with electric drive tractors out there that are autonomous. And then you've got other companies like retrofit kits out there as well. So Spardos, Blue White, GoTrax, those sort of companies. And I think if you think of this category, it's if you compare it to automotive, it's a bit like Ford or BMW in the automotive space. So these guys are incumbents and they've got a large share of the market and they're going to fight to keep that market as innovation's happening. But if are Ford and BMW actually adding to their market by adding autonomy or electric drive to the car range, or is this a fight to keep their market? And I think that's the kind of play we're seeing right now in that category. And I think that this category really relies on dealership networks and a loyalty of legacy to retain their market share in an increasingly digital changing marketplace. And the aftermarket kits are kind of more likely to be acquired as they become standard features on board tractors. So I see a short runway there in terms of success, in terms of aftermarket kits. But what's more interesting is the second category that's formed, which is your specialty robots and your kind of what we call high value verticals in ag robotics. These are companies that have identified a $1 billion identified market and they're tightly focused and aimed. And they're hyper-focused applications that just do one thing but do it really well. So if you think about something like robotically picking an apple, there's a market opportunity out there. It's a $40 to $60 billion market opportunity out there to robotically pick an apple. And so we're seeing a lot of interest in here in terms of really high-end robotic solutions that solve problems in agriculture. And the key thing is that companies in this category, this high-value verticals, they create value and they create new markets that that first category can't get with incremental features and traditional business models. So the companies you see in here are like Abundant Robotics that was developing apples that have relaunched now, Carbon Robotics, FarmWise, and they're really highly targeted, highly focused companies that are often solar-powered, AI, machine learning, computer vision type things that say kill weeds in lettuces with lasers designed for the Salinas Valley, often Silicon Valley kind of funded companies. And if you bring that back to the automotive world, I think in this category, creating the value like Mobileye or Intel has done in the autonomous car market. The last category is what we call platform autonomy, and that's where we sit. And these are the autonomous tool carriers that carry smart implements and new technology into agriculture's attachments. And this is where autonomy really sits in terms of the one-trick ponies in category two that create huge vertical value can't deliver broad solutions across agriculture. If we're truly looking to bring new farming practices and revolutionise agriculture, it's not going to be done through a high-value vertical. So platform autonomy unlocks value across verticals in Cat 2 by being the conduit to market across all crops and markets. So the sort of companies sitting in here is like Neo Robotics, AgroIntelio, the Dot Robot, ourselves sit in this category. And this is where new value is being captured with new business models and a growing customer base across multiple industries. And if you want to jump back to automotive, and I like this analogy, but if Ford and BMW are in kind of category one, this is where Tesla and Rivian sit in the autonomous car market. And if you look at the fanfare and the loyalty of, say, Tesla with a growing customer base and how they've redefined just how a car could be built, what it could do, how it could be sold, this bucket doesn't just capture the value of ag machinery. It captures value across the vertical technology in the sector and will also capture value in terms of production and even agronomy and agriculture. And this is where I see ag robotics at a venture scale across multiple industries. It's an interesting time. And I think you're seeing a lot of deal flow and we're seeing a lot of excitement and fizz in kind of category one and category two right now. And category three is probably the underserved category, I think, here in terms of opportunities right now and in terms of robotics.
Why do you think that category one and category two have attracted more funding and more press and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, sharks with lasers, right? Everyone's seen the Austin Powers movie and the shiny thing is a high-value vertical that revolutionises. I mean, think about it, being able to kill weeds with no chemicals is really high-value add. And to be able to pick an apple, whether it's an orange or whether it's prune a grapevine with a robot is really high-value add and inspires people and it's a great story and it's a really tight ROI and the kind of target market that can be defined, funded and fits the VC model. So I think that's why you see so much interest in Cat 2. I think Cat One is, I think it's incremental and it doesn't take a lot of imagination to find it and to find it compelling. In terms of driverless tractors and things like that, I think everyone's been talking about driverless tractors forever. I think the world's been amazed by driverless cars and what the technology could be there. It's an interesting category as well. And there's incumbents spending money in that sector, probably less in terms of VC or external investment, but there's internal investment from incumbents in there, which is probably a little bit of a signal as to the potential in that market. Mm. And so I think platform autonomy, I think you need to understand more about ag, and it takes deeper insight to imagine what the future looks like in that.
Why is that? What is it that you can do in the platform category? Or if you're a farmer, why do you end up preferring that kind of solution? I imagine some of the challenges, like who distributes it, who services it, do I have to farm differently, change practices? There's a bit of a shift there. What's better about it?
Because it really opens up innovation. So in terms of platform autonomy, it's antagonistic in terms of what goes on board and who develops the technology to solve a problem. Because if it's genuinely a platform technology, it embraces everyone to create the solutions and deliver it on boards. When you think of 3 ag tech developers, 5 ag tech developers, 50 different companies developing technology, you get competitive tension between developers that develop better solutions and deliver them through the farmer. So that adds value to you as a farmer. There's 3 companies with weed detection technology on board our robots now, and they're adding more value as they incrementally improve their technology to the farmers that use it. So I think that's really important. And I think the ability also to invite other companies in. A lot of the new attachments going aboard our robots are companies that are invited in by the farmers, the user base who are already using our robots as well. But I think the other thing is the different business models out there. If you look at how ag's evolved and ag's been traditional in so many ways, we see path to markets through traditional dealership models that are kind of bricks and mortar, and you go in and buy your tractor from a dealer, shake hands with the salesman. Are those value propositions really adding value in the modern world? And I find as a farmer, and a lot of the farmers we talk to, by the time you go to buy a tractor, you already know what you're going to buy. You're only there to haggle with the sales guy. And that's annoying to have to do that, because you've already been on Twitter and asked your friends what tractor you should buy, and you found out what the problems are with the model you're looking at. I think that there's really big opportunities now in agriculture machinery with new business models and distribution models, and something that we're exploring really hard in Swarm Farm about global expansion and doing that without dealers and with direct sales, and how that a bit allows us to scale our business. That opens up things like right to repair and empowering farmers and giving them the right to self-determination on how their machinery is supported and serviced. Right now, so much machinery has to be repaired by a dealer and supported, and it opens up the ability for independents and others to support this technology and roll out in regions and also innovate on top of that.
And how do farmers in this world get your robot? Like, obviously the big power of distribution is, even though maybe you don't need the brochure and maybe it's more of buyers come in much more educated about what they want, it's a physical place where they can store parts and fix things and provide service and actually get stuff. How does distribution work in this platform autonomy world?
To be honest, we don't have a sales team at all. Our robots are sold from inbound inquiries that come in, and the way our robots sold are generally neighbours have seen neighbours running our robots, been watching them over the fence and built confidence over a period of time and come and put their order in.
How does the business model work? How does a farmer actually buy the robot?
So robots go out on a 3-year operating lease. So a farmer signs up for his robot for a 3-year commitment. He pays monthly for it. And at the end of 3 years, we take it back and renew it for the latest model. And it seems to work really well. And farmers don't get stuck with obsolete technology at the end. There's the opportunity to renew that lease if they want to keep it for longer. And we're able to keep our technology moving as well, because autonomous technology is moving really fast. So it means that we're not stuck with obsolete machines in the future that we can't find parts or service for in future years. So it seems to be a really good model.
And what have farmer reactions been so far to Swarm Farm? Is there resistance? What, I guess, maybe concerns do you hear most often?
I guess early on, it was, this thing's going to be too small for me. Like most farmers that are successful have got the biggest equipment around, and that's how they've been successful, because big equipment's allowed them to expand their operation and be efficient at it. And so particularly in the early days when farmers saw robots, they said, this thing's too small, it won't do what I want. And we've had the conversation, said, you need to think differently about this. This isn't about a driverless tractor and automating getting someone out of the cab. This is about better agronomy, and you're going to use this differently to how you use your tractor. So we had a lot of conversations about that, and then let people sit back and watch. And a farmer running our robots with weeding technology on board, the weed detection cameras I talked about earlier, uses completely different agronomy and decision-making to his neighbour that may have the same weeding technology camera onboard a tractor. And it's a fundamental shift because they're changing their kind of use of residuals, they're changing their crop rotation planning. And so they're seeing it as a system. And it's even interesting, the use patterns. We've got robots out there that are doing over 3,500 hours a year now. And so in 3 years' time, those robots are going to have over 10,000 hours on them. So it's interesting watching the use patterns of how this technology gets used compared to a tractor. There's very few farmers out there who buy a new tractor and still own it when it's got 10,000 hours. Most people trade it in on truly for half those hours because of reliability.
How about that kind of right to repair question? Are you seeing farmers and customers want to provide that support themselves, or how is support working? And is your kind of vision of farmers taking that back into their own hands playing out?
I think quite well. We have our own field service people in the field at the moment and supporting our technology. We have a guarantee with our robots that they will be supported. That's been really important for a new technology to market. We're also going to offer farmers the opportunity to maintain their own robot if they so choose to, and also allow independents to take on servicing our robots if they want to generate income out of doing that. So there's not a one size fits all here. It's simply giving people the choice of how they want to service their and have their technology supported. And this has got implications because so many countries around the world have next to no ag tech because they don't have big tractor dealerships around them. And they don't have access to ag tech and the latest technology. Yet some of these regions are really big agricultural producers and they've got issues with nitrogen runoff. They've got issues with weeds. They've got issues with how much soil erosion they have. And our robots will have future solutions for those regions. So building a product that can be supported without official dealerships is really important to us because that means we can scale into multiple markets. We can make an impact around the world, not just in developing nations already have plenty of ag tech. We can actually make a fundamental difference in multiple markets.
You mentioned the kind of changing behavior and some of the insights that we will continue to have around autonomy and like how that means farming could be fundamentally different than it is today. Are there any examples of things customers are doing that has surprised you? Now they have a robot or they have autonomy that they're doing things differently, or maybe they've surprised themselves if they haven't surprised you?
Yeah, no, definitely. We've got one farmer now who has three of our robots. He's actually intercropping now with cover crops between his cotton crops. So he used to grow a rotation where he grew half his farm to cover crop, half to crop. He's now planting the entire farm to strips of cover crop and commercial crop as well. And so he's really targeting a better water use efficiency because in a really wet year, he's able to capitalize on excess rainfall, but he's still able to hold his yields in a dry year when there's poor rainfall because he's still got his cover crop strips in there and he's still able to maintain the yield because of the planting densities he has. So that's been really interesting to watch that one play out. But I think we're going to learn a lot more about that. And if that means that more farmers can take on cover cropping, that's a really good outcome.
What are you hearing customers or farmers more broadly say about the evolving autonomy landscape? Is it positive? There's excitement. John Deere's just made this announcement and this stuff's really coming. Is there sort of skepticism that it's not going to be real? Or is there a kind of preference across those three categories that you're hearing from farmers?
I think certainly there's a frustration from farmers that the stuff in Cat 2 is not available yet. There's probably been some overpromise and as to how quickly things will come to market. There's still very little available out there for non-chemical weeding that can spot weed apply. And so it's still coming. We're still waiting for it, but it's not quite there yet. And I think even ourselves in Swarm Farm thought that it would have got here sooner than it did. I think things like fruit picking, everyone wants it, but it's going to take some time to get there. So there's that frustration out there of how long it's taking Cat 2 to deliver those really high-end solutions. I think in Cat 1, I think the cost of farming machinery now is just so high. Some of these options are talking about being $500,000 options with subscriptions on top that are going to be really expensive to market. And who is the true customer for this?
What do you mean by that? Who's the true customer?
We're seeing sprayers now, conventional sprayers out there, $1 million now, close to $1 million Australian to buy one. And it's getting to the stage where some of this technology is almost unaffordable at those costs. And then if you add on autonomy on top of it, how much more expensive is it going to be? And who's the true customer for this? Is there really even a market for this at that cost? I'm not saying there isn't, but what's the secondhand market for this is this becomes 5 years old and becomes unreliable because no one wants an autonomous machine that's not reliable. That's half the point of autonomy. It just gets out there and works and you just push the button and away it goes. So I think there's some interesting conversations that are going on. We're hearing that in the field as well.
You mentioned a few environmental drivers for you guys and some of the reducing chemicals and cover cropping and things like that. But you mentioned using a diesel engine. What's your view on why diesel? Why not electrification? Is that coming?
Yeah, in terms of power plants, our first robots actually were electric drive. We then stepped into diesel power because we realized that we weren't going to get there on electric drive in the short term. And I often say it's like Elon started with his driverless cars and Teslas, proving to the world that there was a market for electric cars and they could be awesome. And he started over here, and now that he's proven that the world wants electric cars and there's a market for it, he's now developing autonomy. It's going to meet in the middle somewhere. We started the other way around. Farmers didn't have a desire for electric drive tractor, but they had a huge desire for autonomy. So we went out and proved to the world that farmers and the world's ready for autonomous technology in agriculture. And we've proven that now, and we have this product market fit and massive demand for what we're doing. And so now our opportunity is, now we've got that, the value add here is electric drive to go on top. So we've started on the opposite end to Elon, and in the middle, we're going to meet with electric drives in the future. But I think the kicker for this is renewable energy and obviously the cost of diesel and all these things right now. The desire to have alternative fuels is getting more exciting. And I'm super excited about, I think, hydrogen and the potential to produce it at source. And I think there's some really good kind of fits there in agriculture because of the logistics and the ability to produce hydrogen at source and store it and the energy density we can achieve. So pretty excited about the opportunities for that and the opportunities for hydrogen to value add, even for nitrogen use on farm in terms of fertilizer as well. Something that keeps me awake at night thinking about the opportunities on that one. Not quite ready to do it yet, but certainly in the future there'll be opportunities.
And how about the kind of classic existential question of whether we're replacing jobs and human labor with autonomy, and you know, what does that mean for these regional communities? What's your response to that?
It's interesting that the first five robots we sold were at the Australian Cotton Conference 3 years ago. And every one of those growers said, I want this technology on my farm because we need to engage the next generation in ag. I want this technology on my farm so I can get more good engaged people into agriculture. And it was a very genuine kind of comment that kind of came out from all of them. And it was interesting since then, that comment just keeps coming through that we need to get more young people involved in agriculture. And if this technology helps, that is a really good thing. And I still consider myself a young farmer, even though I'm getting a bit older now. But the opportunity to bring more people into agriculture is something that's very important to Josie and I, the founders of Swarm Farm. And we think that through our robots, there's the opportunity to actually bring new opportunities into agriculture and to create wealth in our regional towns and communities. And if that's because more people are coming into ag to get involved in farming and the higher end technology that we're bringing in with autonomy, if that means more businesses setting up to service and support robots and creating job opportunities in our towns and regions, if that means that more ag tech entrepreneurs are setting up, developing solutions for agriculture, high value vertical technology that can be released on board robots, I think that's fantastic.
However much Andrew has learned in the years since he started Swarm Farm, we're still in the really early stages of the autonomous equipment era. I think Andrew's framing of the space is especially useful. He describes the three categories of players in agrobotics. The first is driverless tractors, both those built by the major equipment companies, and retrofit kits that startups are building to make existing equipment autonomous. Previous podcast guest Fieldin, with their acquisition of Midnight Robotics, would fit here. The second is hyper-specialized, task-based robots for things like picking and spraying. And then the third is platform or integrated autonomy, where providers like Swarm Farm exist. The first category is likely to continue to be dominated by existing players, selling through existing channels and leveraging capital and loyalty advantages. Players in the second category are often aiming, at least initially, at smaller markets. So, though I expect to see acquisitions by incumbents in these markets, I think we'll continue to see challenges here in attracting venture funding and in getting to scale. The third category seems to us to hold the most venture scale potential, with companies like Swarm Farm offering the chance to support great tech in other categories coming to market, giving farmers more options and control, and creating competitive tension for implement suppliers to add more value along the way. I also appreciated Andrew's questions around the true customer for farm equipment, given the rising prices that threaten, in some geographies at least, to push well beyond affordability for many. In addition to fueling the value proposition for autonomy, I also think we'll see new financing and business models emerge, whether innovations around leasing, subscription models, or even service and maintenance. I think Andrew's skepticism around the preeminence of the equipment dealership is also pretty interesting. We've been thinking lately about the very rapid transition made in some parts of the ag tech sector from buyer beware, where a heavy burden of education was on the selling company's sales force, to more of a seller beware dynamic, where farmers know exactly what they want and can do significant comparisons, research, and even price shopping without the help of a trusted dealer. As the handshake hegemony of the ag equipment space continues to be tested by new digitally native entrants with solid tech and more direct relationships with growers, we expect farmers will be more and more open to thinking differently about equipment. Andrew is making his bet that being close to farmers and rural communities will be part of a winning strategy as he and his team build a world-class autonomous platform company. We obviously think it's a good one, as it's allowed Swarm Farm to strike an effective balance between the world of tech and farmers who need better tools to get jobs done. So that's it for another episode of AgTech So What. Thanks to our guest, Andrew Bate, co-founder of Swarm Farm Robotics, and of course, thank you for listening. For more information on any of the resources mentioned in this podcast, please visit our website, agtechsowhat.com. I'm Sarah Nolette. Catch you next time.